There are some things that are so important, that are so fundamental to creation, that they are ingrained in the very fabric of reality. And the Eucharist is one of those things. Now, you might say, well, Jesus didn't even institute the Eucharist until thousands of years of human history had already gone past. So how can it be ingrained in the fabric of reality? But God stands outside of time. God does not act in time. He acts in eternity. And from the very moment of creation, God knew that he was going to come down among us to die on the cross, to rise from the dead, and to feed us with his very body and blood. And so there are many things, many events that God intentionally caused to happen in human history before the coming of Christ that are predictions, that are prophecies of something that will happen in the life of Christ or in the life of the church. This is what we call typology. You may have heard us talk about that word before. It's the idea that there are these types, these foreshadowings in the Old Testament times that predict something in the life of Christ. And so, of course, we have the perfect example of that in our readings today. This type of the manna, which prefigures, which teaches us something about the reality of the Eucharist. And actually, it's not just the manna. Interestingly, it's the manna and the quail, right? Because just as God's people in the Old Testament, in the journey through the desert, were saved by miraculous bread and miraculous flesh and blood from the quail, so in the Eucharist, we have received not just miraculous bread, but really, on a deeper level, miraculous flesh and blood. But there are three other ways that we can see how the manna of the Old Testament is a type, is a prediction of the reality of the Eucharist. First of all, the manna in the Old Testament is bread from heaven. It literally came down each morning with the dew that they found it on the ground in the morning. Well, likewise, of course, the Eucharist is bread from heaven. Now, the bread that we use in the Eucharist, in Mass here, doesn't come from heaven. Obviously, it's just regular bread here from the earth, made, as we say, by the work of human hands. In fact, made by the Passionist nuns over there in Erlanger, right? But he who is above the heavens truly comes down into that bread. And so, it is truly the bread from heaven. Second, the bread, the manna in the desert is daily bread. Of course, the Israelites have to go out every day and gather up this bread. Now, there's nothing particularly, I suppose, remarkable in that. We all have to work every day for our daily bread. But there's some interesting miraculous properties that the manna has that show us that God is trying to teach his people with this manna the daily nature in which he takes care of them, that his care, his providence for them is each day, day by day, and that they're called to put his trust, their trust in him. There are two qualities in particular. First of all, the manna, you can't keep it for more than 24 hours, right? If you try to keep it overnight, it goes bad in a big way. There are like worms in it and everything. I don't know if we have any of our kids who are in our vacation Bible school here this year, but they sang a great little song about worms in the bread and all that. So that it would spoil, and that was part of the reason that, of course, they had to go out every day and collect more. But the really miraculous part was it wouldn't spoil for the Sabbath, right? So if you kept the manna overnight from Friday to Saturday, it was perfectly fine, unlike all the other days of the week, so that the people of God did not have to break the Sabbath. The other interesting characteristic of the manna is that when the people went out to gather it, some, of course, went out and gathered a whole bunch. Others just gathered a little bit. But when they would come home and measure it out, everybody had just the right amount. So in those kind of miraculous ways, God was teaching his people through the manna that he is all that they need. He gives them all that they need for today. They need to rely on him, on his providence. Now, that is exactly what the Eucharist teaches us as well, that everything that we have, and indeed everything that we need for today, comes to us through Jesus Christ, and therefore through the Eucharist, his body and blood. Obviously, most of us only get to receive sacramentally the body and blood of Jesus once a week here on Sunday Mass. But this is why we have the old tradition, the old custom in the church of praying a daily act of spiritual communion. We actually have that prayer in the prayers on your missalettes. If you've never prayed that prayer before, it's a great prayer. But just that reminder every day that every grace that we need today, we will receive. And we will receive it in some real sense through the Eucharist, because we will receive it through Jesus Christ. So that the importance of that, the Eucharist as our daily bread, placing our trust in God. The third characteristic that makes the manna a type of the Eucharist is that it is food for the journey. Obviously, this is what sustains the Israelites through their 40 years of wandering in the desert. Interestingly, when someone is on their deathbed and we come to bring them the last sacraments of the church, when they receive Holy Communion, we call it viaticum, which is Latin for food for the journey. That is the greatest journey of all, after all, from life to death to new life. But really, every time that we receive the Eucharist, it is food for the journey, food to help us continue our travels through this life. And just as the Israelites were trying to get to the promised land, so we are trying to get to the promised land of heaven. So you see how those three characteristics, bread from heaven, daily bread, food for the journey, that the manna was for the people of the Old Covenant, the Eucharist is for us. But of course, what was God's real point in doing all that for the Israelites in the desert? What was he trying to teach them? He was trying to teach them to have faith in him, that he is a God that they can believe in, a God that they can trust, that they can have faith that he will take care of them always. And what does Jesus say in the gospel today? This is the work of God, that you believe in the one that he has sent. The Eucharist exists for exactly this same purpose, to help us believe, to help us have faith that God is going to take care of everything that we need, that he has even given us his very self. And so it is also an opportunity to express our faith in his real presence. Last Sunday, Father Jim talked about some of the great Eucharistic miracles, the great miracle of Lanciano, Italy, back in the 800s, and the miracle in Argentina back in, I think, 1995 or 2005, something like that. And there are so many of these Eucharistic miracles whereby God teaches us to have faith. Faith in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist. One of the ones that I love is the Eucharistic miracle of Moncada, Spain. This happened back in the late 1300s. And this was during the time when there was, you know, popes and anti-popes and all kinds of weird things going on in the church. And there was this priest who, because of the different problems in the church, doubted the validity of his ordination. He was not sure that he had actually been made a priest. He was very troubled by that. And he prayed to God to help him overcome these doubts. And so God worked a miracle. That Christmas, he didn't know this at the time, of course, but that Christmas, as he was offering Mass, he held up the Eucharist at the consecration, and there was a little 5-year-old girl there in the congregation, and she saw, when he lifted up the host, not the host, but a little child on Christmas Day, keep in mind. And she said that to her mother afterwards. She said, "I want to stay and play with a little baby." Her mother was like, "What are you talking about?" And so she told her the whole story. So the next day they went back to Mass. The same thing happened again. Her mother said, "What do you see?" She said, "I see a beautiful little baby. It must be the baby Jesus." So then the mother took the little girl to the priest. They explained the whole situation. The priest was intrigued by this, and so he decided to give the child a test. The next day, they had Mass, and he took one host in particular, and he left it aside. He didn't consecrate it. But when he came down to the communion rail, he brought all the hosts with him, including the one that was not consecrated. And so he lifted up the consecrated host in front of this little child. He said, "What do you see?" This little girl said, "I see the baby Jesus." Then he gave communion to her mother and picked up the unconsecrated host. He said, "What do you see?" She said, "I see a little white disc." And that was enough for that priest. He knew. That child had no way of knowing that he had run that test, that he had not consecrated that host. He knew that his ordination was valid. He was a real priest. And more importantly, that Jesus Christ was really, truly present in the Eucharist. Jesus wants us to have faith. Here at Mass, as we receive the Eucharist, to exercise our faith in him. And, you know, as I mentioned last week, if you heard my homily, we should always examine what we do at Mass and why. So let me end with this. One of the most important things that we do at Mass about our faith in the Eucharist is to make those gestures of worship, of adoration. When we come into church, what do? We genuflect to what? To the Eucharist. When we come forward to receive Holy Communion, we make a bow to worship the Eucharist. Do we really do those things with faith, as an expression of our faith? If there are types, if there are symbols in the ancient times that show the true faith that we should have in the Eucharist, there ought to be symbols still in the church today that express our faith. We should become, as it were, a type of our faith in the Eucharist by the way in which we worship Jesus in the Eucharist. Someday, you know, I imagine the people of this parish will build a real church. I'll be long gone by then. I won't be your pastor, I'm sure, by then. But I certainly encourage you, if you are ever alive at that time, that when you build that new church, it should have a communion rail. You know, one of the great tragedies after the council was that they tore out all the old communion rails. What greater expression could there be of our true faith, of Jesus really present in the Eucharist, than to receive the bread from heaven as we kneel before him, as we express our adoration before him? So whether we're doing it in our bodies or in our souls, when we come to communion, we should be humbling ourselves, worshiping Jesus in Holy Communion as an expression of our faith in the Eucharist. So as we come today to receive him, to receive that bread from heaven, that daily bread, that food for the journey, let us make our act of faith in Jesus Christ really, truly, and substantially present in the Eucharist, body, blood, soul, and divinity, in whom we have placed our faith.